Welcome to Stupid Not Stupid. I'm Matt, here with my man Jason, the co-host whose motivations he proclaims are always in the service of a higher power. Himself.
Yes, in the service of myself.
That is correct.
Happy 4th of July weekend, Jason. I'd say happy Independence Day, but I think your ancestors might have been on the other side of that one. I don't know. What were the Callahans during the Revolutionary War?
In Ireland, actually. So they were technically part of that at all.
Isn't Ireland part of Great Britain at the time of the American Revolution?
That's an interesting question.
I guess it depends on what part of Ireland, maybe.
Right, yeah, exactly. We were not from that part. Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a guest in the studio today. So that means it's time for
Their Stupid Edition.
So for anyone listening for the first time, this is the version of the show where we bring on a fan who's an expert in a particular field or just someone that Jason and I found on the internet, hashtag Rag Reynolds, and we argue with them about whether something is stupid or not. So I'm very pleased to introduce our guest for this week. Whenever we have someone new, we try to figure out what kind of first they are for the show. So I was thinking about this one, Jason, and I think our guest this week is the first non-PhD female on the podcast.
Wow.
Is that
true? That's pretty esoteric.
Well, there's always something.
Right. But of course, as is commonplace on this show, anyone who comes on our show
gets a PhD.
Immediately becomes a doctor.
Right. So that's what I'm really excited about. So I wanted to say welcome, Dr. Dandeshi. Congratulations on your elevation, because as Jason pointed out, everyone who makes an appearance on Super Not Stupid gets an honorary PhD from a institution of higher learning of your choice. So you you can just choose where you want it to be from.
Oh, wonderful. So I do consider myself a expert in all questions philosophy. So I think I'll fit right in.
Is the P, is there, what's the P in PhD? It's philosophy.
Philosophy,
right?
It's doctor in philosophy.
Okay. Yeah, so you're already set. I mean,
and I will insist on being called doctor.
Yeah, well, Dr.
Dandeshi.
Yeah, we're going to call you Dr. Dandeshi for the rest of the show. That's what we were going to do.
No,
you,
in all settings.
Okay, well, you can insist. Yeah, insist all you want. Like, that doesn't really, I mean, it's Independence Day. Do what you want. I don't care.
Freedom.
So, Dr. Dandeshi, another tradition we have on the show is that we always share what we're drinking. So those that home who choose to partake can participate along. So Jason, what do you got this week?
So I am back to the bottle I brought from Columbus, Ohio, the Magnolia Bourbon. And
it's like there's like some, I'm sure it's not Easter. That bottle just seems to keep replenishing itself.
Yeah,
like there's like a miracle happening.
Yeah, yeah. It's the opposite of all the other bottles we seem to have in this house. And then just grabbed a bottle randomly out of the beer fridge and grabbed a bottle of The Truth.
The Truth. The Truth keeps creeping in. I've got a Truly Berry Punch. Just trying to keep it consistent with last week, where I think I had that just blue sugar water that said Smirnoff on the
terrible
side.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was great. Truly Berry Punch. And Dr. Dandeshi, what are you hydrating with this week?
I have a very exciting still water and a couple of juice boxes to keep me going.
I would mock you for the juice box, but I think two different times I've had juice boxes.
At least twice.
At least twice I've had juice boxes on the show. So
okay, so just carrying on the tradition.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, what you're really doing is like living up to the example of your mentor. That's what it feels most like to me, Dr. Dandeshi.
Whatever helps you sleep at night.
All right, so let's get to
how big of a pillow do you need for that ego?
All right, so let's get to our stupid, not stupid question for this week. And this one is pretty straightforward. Stupid or not stupid, does true altruism exist? And since I know Dr. Dandeshi is a hardcore listener, she doesn't need me to explain what comes next. But for anyone who's new to the show, what we always do after, well, not always, but usually, what we usually do after we throw out what our stupid, not stupid question is, we then hit you with a definition. And we are gentlemen, and we're also deferential to our academic superiors, Dr. Dandeshi.
Right.
So
appreciate
we let,
that.
Yeah. we let her choose the definition for the stupid, not stupid question. And this is what Dr. Dandeshi sent us. True altruism is defined as consciously acting to help another person and getting absolutely no extrinsic or intrinsic value in return. Is that the definition that you want to roll with, Dr. Dandeshi? Are you sure?
Yes, I approve of this definition.
Okay. All right. Well, we're gentlemen and deferential to our superiors. So do you want to just give us your opening salvo here and just your thoughts on altruism, just your 30,000 foot like executive summary? Like what gets published on the cover page of your PhD thesis here on this?
So just to say first, I take slight issue with how you are very skeptical of my definition, but we'll go with it. I believe this is a true definition of true altruism. Okay, yeah. So my position is true altruism does not exist. Humans biologically are created with the sole purpose of self-preservation, or the primary purpose of self-preservation, I should say. Even when we think that we are being altruistic, truly altruistic, we are not. There are too many outside variables and motivators that we may be aware of, that we may not be aware of in our subconscious, that keep us from being able to do anything truly altruistic. I do want to clarify that I believe that altruism exists. We can do selfless acts, but there is no such thing as true altruism.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I think, I guess that's subjective also to call it interesting. We'll see what other people think. But, all right, well, let's talk about this definition for a second, and then we're going to do something that we usually do. I'm just going to go through a series of scenarios, and you explain to me then how they're not truly altruistic. But on the definition itself, Jason, do you have any thoughts on this before I rip it apart?
Yeah, I got problems with two words in that definition.
Okay.
The first is person.
Okay. Yeah. I'm with you on this one.
Yeah. Because to me, altruism is actually a function of the behavior. Altruism, regardless of its motivation, is actually a function of natural selection. Like we see this behavior in species outside of humanity.
So I don't want to go too far down this road because it might play into our scenarios. So let me just ask, based off what Jason has said, Dr. Dandeshi, are you comfortable removing the word person from your definition?
Well, the word person is used as to help another person. So it's not the person doing the altruism.
But are we anthropomorphizing it?
Like, right. Because you could have birds that help other birds or fish that help other fish. Or
the question wasn't, do humans practice true altruism? It's that, does true altruism exist?
Right.
So are you comfortable removing the word person from your definition?
So my argument would be that the consciousness is a very important part of this definition. And okay. Animals do not have the same level of consciousness that humans do.
We've talked about this on the show before. Yeah. So how about this?
I fundamentally disagree
with
that.
What if we substitute? Okay, so let's do this. We'll substitute person for conscious being.
I mean, again, the person is used as the person being helped. It's not the person doing
the
helping.
Okay, so we're functionally talking about the same thing. All right, so do we have a coalescence here that we're going to use person interchangeably? We're not going to get hung up on the semantics, but we generally all agree we're talking about consciousness, not specifically people.
Sure, I'm good with that.
Okay. Jason, do you have another word you want to dig into?
Yeah, the other one that I think is very laden in this definition that we have to also define is the concept of value.
Okay.
When you say that, you know, an individual performing an act of altruism receives no extrinsic or intrinsic value, what does that mean? What do you consider to be value?
Anything that a person may want or that may help them in their ultimate goal of self-preservation.
Is it only self-preservation or is it a feeling?
Well, this is, yes. So feelings are part of that.
But what do feelings have to do with self-preservation?
Well, so you do something to help somebody because it makes you feel good. It keeps you going. It is a motivating factor.
Okay, so that really doesn't have anything to do with self-preservation, though. And that doesn't mean we necessarily need to change the definition, but you're saying good feelings is a value proposition to you.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. I just want to be clear what we're talking
about. So we're all on the same page now. Okay. All right. I understand that. The only things I had on the definition were, and this isn't like any original thinking here. If you go and, you know, listen to any lecture about this or sit on any one philosophy,
with that about you, Matt.
Any philosophy 101 lecture on this, you'll get pitched this concept intentions versus impact when it comes to this question. So was the action that you took intended? So does intent matter here? So if you do something and it results in an action as it relates to your definition here, Dr. Dandeshi, so if you do it inadvertently, you don't know that the action that you took had a positive or negative impact, or you do that action accidentally. You know, it's like the Dr. Seuss book, because a little bug went ka-choo. Like if I sneeze and through a butterfly effect, I cure cancer on the other side of the world. How does that jive with this definition of altruism? Because I got no intrinsic, external or internal value from it. I was unconscious of what I was doing, but it was a selfless act that created a positive outcome somewhere in the world.
So intent absolutely does matter. And to me, that's wrapped up in the word conscious. You are making a choice to do something altruistically. For example, if you take an action out of instinct where you did not have time to think about it, it happened to help somebody and not benefit yourself, that does not count as a true altruistic act.
But it is altruistic.
Yes.
But not true altruism.
It's not truly altruistic. Yes.
Yeah. We picked a really bad week to be talking about choice, but but
I shouldn't laugh. Dr. Dandeshi can laugh. I can't laugh.
Yeah, I'm laughing because it's sad.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's gallows humor here. That said, I don't have a problem with that in the context of this conversation. I think that she's correct that we're not talking about accidental altruism here.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So we're all on the same page with the definition. So let's go through the fun exercise of Matt throwing scenarios at you guys from, you know, least compelling to most compelling, or maybe in this case, it'll be least interesting to most interesting. And we'll move through the list. And Dr. Dandeshi and possibly Jason, I don't know whose side you're on yet.
I'm not sure yet either,
yeah,
actually.
Okay, so we'll see. It's obviously
no pressure.
Yeah, I'm not side I want to be on, but that may be contrary to my evidence.
Dr. Dandeshi and I throwing down, and we'll see where we go. So the first and most obvious one, volunteerism.
Sure.
So if I give up my Saturday and go down to a soup kitchen and volunteer, or maybe I have a particular skill set, let's say like I'm a doctor and I, you know, go into the community and give like free blood tests or like stitch wounds, whatever I do, and I don't get paid, I lose time, I lose energy, I lose income, I actually lose things. The cost benefit analysis to me is a negative. Is that a truly altruistic act?
Okay. So this is a pretty easy one to unravel. I will again point out that based on my understanding and definition, what I'm going to defend here, cost-benefit analysis is not what we are talking about. Any benefit means that it is not truly altruistic.
So even if it is 99% negative for you and there's a 1% like positive mitigation of the negative consequences of your actions, you're saying it's not altruistic.
It's not truly altruistic.
Oh my God. Okay.
This is what we are not talking about altruism. We are talking about true altruism.
Okay.
Which is why I think it's going to be really hard for you to make your case. But okay.
Right. So cost-benefit analysis, this is not a return on investment analysis.
Okay.
Right?
I get that. Like I said, we're going to start with the least compelling.
And I actually have difficulty with that, but I'm fine with it for this part of the conversation.
I'm fine conceding with it because I already know that I'm right. So we're only going to build towards better and stronger examples here. So I'm fine with that one.
So the other issue there, just something that I'm curious about, your concept of value here. One of the things, you know, if you're practicing your skill set, whatever it may be, it's called practice, right? Like, so you are gaining knowledge by stitching somebody up or, you know, as a doctor.
You're becoming more proficient in your trade by practicing your trade.
Right. Now, that's a harder argument for me to make if you're volunteering at a soup kitchen, because generally speaking, it's not like professional chefs or, you know, soup ladlers who are volunteering their very specific skill set for this. But at the same time, from a doctor standpoint, from a professional standpoint, volunteering your time, I think you can make a case that there actually is a return that you're gaining.
That's a fascinating and compelling point, Jason. Dr. Dandeshi, you really should have thought of that. I'm disappointed in you.
I mean, to me, that is a concrete example of a benefit, but I wasn't even going to make that point. I'm going straight to the, like, he's going to feel good about helping people. That
I love
is
how
an
she just assumes the doctor's a man. Like, she just went straight to...
He or she is going to feel good about helping
or
people.
Or they. We are all inclusive here.
Yeah. I mean, we've gone so far on this podcast to say hashtag mistresses matter. Like, we make sure everyone is treated equally here, Dr. Dandeshi. So, okay. All right. I'm actually...
Insert doctor pronoun.
Yeah.
We'll get some intrinsic benefit from helping people by feeling good, by whether it's conscious or subconsciously working towards something that will look good on his resume or that will enable people to want to help him in the future. Should he need help? They need help. Let's just stick with the
Already dug a giant hole in the previous episode, but you can keep digging. That's okay, Dr. Dandeshi.
Well, as we also established in our digging to the center of the earth episode, you know, the first rule of holes is when you're in one, keep digging.
Just keep digging, yeah. okay, well, Dr. Dandeshi made a good point that, you know, even if it's on a very, you know, minor level, especially in comparison to the negative impacts of your action, it can still feel good, even if it only feels a little good. I don't have any direct experience with this, but from what I understand, do you know what doesn't feel good? Dying. So here is my next scenario for you, Dr. Dandeshi. Organ donation. Specifically, organ donation that results in, like, for example, you need a heart transplant. And I say, okay, have my heart. It results in my death, but you receive an organ that preserves your life.
So I have a couple of counterpoints to this. Number one is that if you know that if you say no to this person who's asking you for your heart, you will have guilt after that, then doing it is not truly altruistic.
But what if I knew I wasn't going to feel guilt? What if I I don't really like you that much. Like, I don't know how guilty I would feel.
There are other factors, a sense of duty or responsibility where you feel like you are obligated to give this person that you cannot untangle from your motivations for doing it.
So that's an interesting point, but my counterpoint to that would be that whatever those feelings might be, whether the sense of guilt that I may feel if I didn't do it, or the sense of happiness I would get in terms of realizing that I avoided that guilt by doing it, never actually occur because I'm dead.
No, I'm talking about if you say no, if someone asks you for your heart and you say no, you are going to live with guilt after that. So knowing that you will live with guilt after, which you don't want, is an outside factor that is polluting your true altruism.
But I won't be alive to experience the relief of having not done it. I think death is an interesting factor in the calculus here because it erases it turns the system off, right? So you can't experience the positive or negative consequence of your action.
I took a lot of calculus. I don't remember death ever being a factor.
It's one of those imaginary numbers, right, little case I.
Exactly. Yeah. The little D.
Yeah.
So first of all, I think we're misconstruing the concept of an organ donation here. Nobody comes and asks you for a heart and then you specifically give them a heart, right? So
but
first of all,
knowing it will result in your death.
Right. That first brings up the very funny Monty Python skit where, you know, they come knocking on the door and go, oh yeah, you signed your organ donor card. Now we need your organ. And they're just like sawing somebody in half on a table.
But to that, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jason, but to that point, what's that Will Smith movie where he kills himself with a jellyfish, Pay It Forward, or the ultimate something? The premise of the movie is that Will Smith wants to make like the ultimate like gift to the world. So he figures out a way to use this jellyfish to commit suicide in a way that his body will be perfectly preserved. And every useful organ in his body can then be given to people that he doesn't know. So I'm talking about a very finite lane, a very uncommon example. I'm not talking about organ donation writ large, and I want to talk about organ donation more. I'm saying it would be possible to practice true altruism by doing this like jellyfish suicide scenario.
So I think a better scenario for that would be like liver donation, right? Or excuse me, not liver, kidney donation, because you've got two of those and that happens fairly frequently, that somebody who is compatible with another person, like you can donate a kidney to a specific person. Part of the reason that I'm actually not a fan of organ donation is there are a lot of people out there that I don't want to keep living and I don't want to be part of that.
But with the kidney
Maybe
donation...
Maybe don't say that on the internet.
But with the kidney donation, you'll still be alive. So Dr. Dandeshi's point
is different than Matt's example.
I actually agree with Dr. Dandeshi on this one because you'd still be alive to experience the benefits, right?
That's a pretty easy one. Yeah, you're going to feel good. You know, someone who you like is going to keep living.
So I'm saying you have to die as a result of the organ donation to preserve someone else's life. And I think that's an example of true altruism.
Yeah. And we don't have to get into this on this episode, but that also brings up a whole different aspect of the concept of altruism is the people who take advantage of that. Like there are a lot of people who will donate their bodies for medical purposes that end up with their bodies like at a medical facility for research. And those bodies are treated pretty haphazardly, shall we say.
So this is another interesting point as it relates to this. This is something that legislatively, the United States has actually dealt with, specifically the Centers for Disease Control. So there's actually language related to altruism in the federal regulating text that governs the donation of organs. And this dates back to a case in Mississippi, shockingly, I'm sure you guys are going to be surprised to hear, where someone donated their organs, but tried to specify that when their organs were donated, they could only go to a white person.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that at all. Right.
So the CDC eventually ended up working with, I'm guessing, the federal government in some capacity. And the current legislation that governs the donation of organs actually expressly prohibits anything like that, that your donation must be, quote unquote, an altruistic act. It's actually in the legislation. So you give us your organs sight unseen as to what they like. You can't designate this is for someone who needs a heart or this is for a medical college. You have no say. Once you give them up, they're not yours anymore.
Which brings up an interesting point here. So I'm sorry. So we're talking in terms of philosophy, but that's interesting from a legal standpoint. This is already settled, right? That altruism does exist.
Right. That's my point.
But we are differentiating between true altruism and altruism.
But
giving your organ,
I think forced altruism is, that's my whole, this is forced altruism, but can it not also be forced and true?
I don't think this is an example of true altruism. This is just an example of altruism because you are making a choice during your life to give up your organs once you die.
But you will be,
and that choice is not made altruistically.
But you'll never get to experience the positive benefit because you're dead.
But you will know while you are alive after the choice is made that this will happen after you die. And that makes you feel good.
I think it would make me not feel good to know I was going to die.
Well, that's just argument, right?
Yeah, this is what I'm like. You know you're going to die at some point. It may give you some peace or good feeling in your or good feeling in your life to know that something good will happen out of your death. Therefore, it is not a true altruistic act.
I hear what you're saying, Dr. Dandeshi, but I maintain that there is a pathway to true altruism here, whether forced or otherwise, for someone to make a selfless act in which they expire before they are given the opportunity to experience the benefits of that act.
Again, the problem that I have with that argument is that you are making the choice while you are alive, and you have time after that decision to experience either benefit or negative effects.
Well,
so
to
it's
Matt's
affecting
point,
your
though,
decision.
To Matt's point, though, this idea that this lawsuit is actually very interesting in a horrible way, but this idea that somebody wanted to donate their body to specific people, which is kind of the argument that I was making at the beginning of this, like as a joke, that you know there are a lot of people I don't want to donate my organs to. Well, this is actually that case, right? It just happens to be racist where I was just being an asshole.
Callahan v. Mississippi, I think was the name of the case.
Right. Like, I my definition of who I would and would not want my organs to go to has nothing to do with the color of anyone's skin. It has more to do with, you know, the content of their head. But
I would assume you would want your organs to go to people you hated. So like they had to know that like you were responsible for their life, and they had to look themselves in the mirror every day knowing you were responsible for it.
I would only do that if I knew that I was massively mistreating my organs before they got them.
Like, right? You're only going to get like an extra year out of this. Right. Like this is just to make you suffer
gonna be
a little
horrible,
longer.
Painful death. Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering about the exact language of this decision. Like, can you specify something other than race? Because this is, I mean, race is
clearly
like
anything.
A.
You can't specify
no
anything.
Okay, no specifications.
Right. But so the implications of that are if you're this racist jackass in Mississippi who decides to donate their organs to a person that, you know, they wanted to donate it to a white person, this law stipulates that they can't. If they then still choose to donate their organs, they're not getting that.
That's my
that
point.
Benefit.
Hold on. I'm hung up on the law because when you are alive, you can give your kidney to a specific person. So what's the difference between while you're alive? And I mean, I understand the race issue because that goes to constitutionalism and whatever.
I'm not talking about giving a organ to somebody. I'm talking about designating yourself as an organ donor post-death. So like when you mark it on your ID card, like if I'm in a car wreck and you can salvage something from my body, take it and do it. There's no addendum or clause that can be added to that.
Yeah, you're
I can
not saying
give
who's
you my,
going to get
I can do whatever the hell I want with my kidney in a personal capacity. But once I am dead, if I have said to the state, my organs are available, that's all I get to say.
Right. They can give them to whomever they see fit.
Right. And they become the state's organs.
And to my point, like if I were to donate my organs, they could go to somebody that I actually don't want to see living. And that knowledge takes away any joy that I get from donating organs to save a life. If it's a life that I don't want,
is this the point
I
where
don't
I
value,
is this
right?
the point where I point out that you and I share a blood type, Jason? I just want to let you know that.
Oh, come on, Matt. We both know I don't have blood.
All right. Do you got any final thoughts on this one, Dr. Dandeshi, when it comes to organ donors? Has this changed your mind or at least shifted your perspective a little bit?
It has not. Are we still talking about the person dying to give their heart to somebody else?
I agree with you on someone if they live post organ donation, that even though I don't agree with your definition that like feeling is like super valuable, but I agreed. I agree to the definition.
Well, that's usually my argument.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everyone does something and makes any decision based on whether it's going to make them feel good or bad and other things, but that is part of the decision.
I don't agree with the definition, but I agree that I agreed to abide by it. So I'm not going to argue it. Yeah, so I've agreed to abide by it, but I think that death is the loophole that we're looking for.
So, I mean, I will.
Because I never thought of death as a loophole.
That's a t-shirt. At least a quote for a t-shirt, Jason.
Death is the loophole we're looking for.
Right. I will make the point again that there is a difference between true altruism and altruism.
Okay.
And true altruism is very narrowly defined, which is why I very strongly believe that it does not exist, and why I believe I will crush your argument into dust.
Okay. Well, let's move to the next scenario. And this is essentially the same scenario, but I just wanted to put this one in there because we've been talking a lot about disaster movies lately. But suicide missions. So the end of Armageddon, the end of Deep Impact, when Bruce Willis or Robert Duvall blow themselves up to save humanity, it's just like with an organ donation, right? They don't get to live long enough to experience the positive feelings of having saved humanity, right?
I so feel it's a like having watched those movies was an altruistic act on my part.
So I don't know. Do you feel any differently about suicide missions than you feel about organ donation?
Yeah, it's a different question. So,
oh, wow. Okay. I did not think it was a different question.
Oh, it is.
Let's do this.
So I have thought this through.
Wait, so you specifically like contemplated like suicide missions as they relate to altruism before this?
Yes.
You officially have done more research than Jason.
We could have stipulated that as soon as she like had a definition of altruism.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is a different example because you are sacrificing yourself to save a larger group of people as a whole. To me, this is a rational or logical decision. True altruism is you are doing something at a cost to yourself to benefit another person. This kind of decision is a logical, rational decision. You are sacrificing yourself as one person to save a larger group of people. That just makes sense. That is not truly altruistic.
So even if
this is a logical choice.
Even if I agree with that, which I obviously don't. Again, the death loophole comes in. You will never get to live to experience the positive feeling of executing that cost-benefit analysis.
My argument is that this is not, the decision was not made out of altruism. It was made logically.
Okay, so you're saying then, Dr. Dandeshi, that if Jason and I were going to die and you could kill yourself to stop it, that logically, the only option you have is to kill yourself.
Yeah, because one person is less valuable than multiple people.
So you would do that?
Well, first of all, I think it depends on the person.
Well, yes. Well, I mean, sure, but, you know, we're not...
So just automatically from a default, like, you must kill yourself to save two people, you wouldn't even think twice about it.
No, I'm saying the only reason someone would do that is because it's logical. And if you're going to go beyond that and say, okay, they're, you know, they weren't thinking logically, you can go back to the same arguments that I made before, which is that you know that you if you have time to make this decision... That you know that if you don't do it, you're going to live with some survivor's guilt because this group of people died and you didn't do anything because you wanted to save yourself.
I actually agree with her on this one. I think that this is a return on investment equation, that the benefit to yourself is the recognition that like your sacrifice will allow much more good to come,
mm-hmm.
or the potential for much more good to come than if... You know, if it's just you living a life as opposed to 10 people who are going to live their lives,
mm-hmm.
that's an ROI, return on investment equation. That's very different than I think what the organ donation.
So I'm interested to hear you say that, Jason, and agree with Dr. Dandeshi, which sickens me. but this is an interesting bridge to our next scenario then. And Dr. Dandeshi made a good point, and I'm interested to get your take on this now, because I thought this is where I was going to be able to get you on my side, Jason.
Okay.
Altruism in animals. It's well documented on this podcast that I'm an ant man.
Yes.
I love the ants. I'm a big fan of ants. And in our Ants Rule the World episode, we talked about a specific kind of ant. I think they were in the Amazon rainforest, but at the end of every day, they send like two worker ants out outside of the hive. And they wall up the hive from the outside and basically sacrifice themselves. They're like, they fall subject to predation outside the hive to keep the rest of the hive safe.
Right.
So obviously we've already heard kind of Dr. Dandeshi's thoughts on this, and that's like a logical decision, right? Like it's for the good of the greater body.
Mm-hmm.
So that explains it away. But let's explain that then to more complicated animals like, dare I say, Jason, birds, your favorite animal.
Yes.
There are examples of this in nature. Birds are one example, and we can talk about some of the bird examples, but there are lots of other animals in nature that demonstrate true altruistic activity, in my opinion. But just with birds as a starter, I think one of the things I saw that academic did as a study, and the thing that they really wrapped themselves around, were crows and ravens that caw to attract other birds to food.
Yes.
Like they literally derive no value or benefit from that, but they call out to other birds and saying, resources available, everyone come here.
Yeah. So this is actually an interesting one. I was going to use the bat example, but mm-hmm. I prefer the crow because this actually touches on this idea of consciousness, right? Because crows are arguably in their own way mm-hmm. as...
Among the smartest, if not the smartest animals.
Right. Yeah. And like rivaling humans in a lot of ways. Yeah. They just... their intelligence is very different than ours.
Sorry, we should pause here. I don't know if you're aware of this, Dr. Dandeshi. Jason is deep. Like, my love for ants is like minuscule, is ant-sized compared to Jason's love for birds.
Yeah, that's I'm starting to get that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Go, continue, Jason.
No, no. So the example I was going to use was with bats, but it's basically the same dynamic. So bat colonies will go out at night and they will hunt. And some bats are successful and some are not. And in areas of scarcity, the ones that are successful will come back, and the ones that had no success at hunting at all, the successful bats will regurgitate some of their food into the mouths of the bats that are hungry. Now, the thought of, like, that's a very altruistic act. Now, to our wonderful doctor's point, the idea of this is that if you go hungry in the future, this activity will benefit you as well. And this is the same thing with the crows. The idea that if you're attracting everybody to the food that you found, it's more food than you can eat. Because I don't know that the studies have been done that they do that if...
So you're saying it doesn't cost them anything, but it may benefit them in the future.
In the future.
Even if it does cost them.
However, it's these activities that I think lead to the concept of altruism in humans. So the things that we're arguing about for... the concept of altruism within this idea of true altruism, it's difficult to get around this idea that, there's a natural biologist by the name of Richard Dawkins whose entire theory is this concept of the selfish gene, and the idea that all behaviors that we see in nature are basically about a gene trying to preserve itself and move itself forward biologically. And so I think that that's the door that the good doctor is knocking on, that these behaviors, no matter how complex they are.
Can call her the bad doctor.
Fair. Okay. That these behaviors are, in fact, fed forward from much more basic concepts of quote-unquote altruism that's actually behavior that benefits you over time as opposed to in the immediate instance.
I assume you agree, Dr. Dandeshi?
Yes, I was going to make the exact point. That it's, I mean, you can't untangle that from... Okay, if you go hungry in the future, the expectation is that your fellow birds will feed you. So you can't argue that that's
precisely
a truly altruistic
act.
I
was arguing against the concept of person in your definition.
Well, so I was still going to make the point that, I mean, I have a slight issue with trying to prove true altruism in animals because I think it's difficult to argue that they have the same level of consciousness as humans.
This is where you're going to lose, Jason.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't need to go into that right now. And I think even that example, you can disprove with the same.
Okay, I see where you're coming from, and I see Jason slipping to the dark side. So
the right side.
my brethren of the air have let me down, but let me now then move to my brethren of the sea. There are lots of examples of dolphins saving people from sharks or saving people from drowning. So dolphins making a circle around swimmers and agitating water to keep sharks away for swimmers, or people drowning and dolphins bring them back to a ship or bring them back to shore. How do you explain the benefit? I mean, we kill a lot of dolphins. Like, presumably that actually is a overwhelming net negative to dolphins to preserve human life. So what extrinsic or intrinsic value does a dolphin derive from saving a human, which is well documented?
Well, okay, I have a couple things. So
this okay, can I just, I'm really impressed that you have a couple things for everything, because I was sure you weren't going to thought of any of this.
Oh, no. I'm
way more prepped than anybody does for these.
I'm like intimidated by how prepared you are for this
totally
episode.
Agree.
I don't think I have studied this hard for anything since I was in high school.
I thought you were going to say in your PhD program for altruistic sciences.
No, I mean, college is a breeze. But...
Yeah. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
I am prepared. Okay, so now I've totally lost my points, but number
that
one...
That was our goal.
okay. It was in my own self-interest to interrupt you.
Number one is why I had a problem applying this to animals, is that I don't think you can argue that dolphins have the consciousness to be making a cost-benefit analysis about, like, oh, humans kill more of us. So I don't want to save the humans.
Ooh, I can make that argument.
Go ahead. I have more points. So.
No, please. No, go ahead and finish. No, I'm being a bit facetious in that. I feel very strongly about... So you're knocking on a completely different topic, this idea of animal consciousness.
It's because Jason pleasure murders dolphins. He likes to go dolphin hunting. So that's...
anyhow, we can get into that.
Yeah, so
later in this argument, but please, I want to hear your
thoughts. My other points are unrelated. So the next thing I was going to say is that when you were talking about animals, this is more of an instinctual decision. You see a creature in danger, whether it's a dolphin or a human or whatever, and you do whatever you normally do to protect them. That comes from instinct, that may have come from seeing another dolphin do that. But it is not something done out of a decision to help this person. It is an instinctual choice.
I actually don't think that that's supported by scientific study.
But I would, even if it wasn't supported by scientific study, if it's instinctual, that to me is true altruism. You're not, there's no analysis there. You're not deriving anything. You're just doing it.
But you are not doing it consciously to benefit somebody. You're just doing it on impulse.
But you're not benefiting from it.
It doesn't matter. It was not done consciously to benefit somebody.
But it was selfless. It was totally selfless.
It is altruistic. It's not true altruism. Mm.
So there is evidence of dolphins have different social groups, right? There are different, basically, pods of dolphins.
Same with orcas. Like, yeah. Different orcas hunt in different ways based off geography.
I think orcas are actually a better example than dolphins. It's just there's not a huge history of orcas, like, saving humans.
Because they'll eat them.
But there is a history of orcas helping fishermen. Mm-hmm. Like round up fish or round up different sharks or different types of game that orcas like. And there is a lot of history of them helping humans because they benefit from the help. But then when the humans like attack an orca, that help ends.
Yeah. I think I might have mentioned this before. I don't know if you've seen the documentary Blackfish.
Yeah.
But the cove that they go into where they capture Lolita or whatever the famous orca is.
Yeah.
That's like right next to my house.
Oh,
where
wow.
I grew up. Yeah, they like net it off, dynamite it, round them all up and capture them. And ever since that happened, not a single orca has swam in to the cove. They're done with it. Like generationally, they never come back.
That's not instinctual. That's learned behavior.
Right.
And same thing. Different pods of orcas hunt differently and it's taught generationally. So when I'm talking about this idea of consciousness and the idea that animals, their sense of consciousness is different than ours. So it seems alien. It's not that it's inferior. It's just
not human.
Different.
Yeah, it's just not human.
And that's where this whole argument about altruism, I think, is really interesting, that you see altruistic behaviors, regardless of whether or not it's true altruism, you see it outside of humanity constantly. And it's something that we have to take into account, in my opinion.
So the next point I was going to mention was the free will tied up in true altruism. And
should we call Dr. TJ real quick?
As our resident animal behavior expert.
Or lover.
Sure. Part of my argument in what makes true altruism is that you are making a decision freely. So, for example, if you feel like you have an obligation or a responsibility to protect someone or something, and so you do something to protect them that may be at a cost to you, that's not true altruism because you are doing it from a sense of duty or responsibility or obligation. And if you did not do it, even if it comes at great cost to you, you would feel guilty later or feel responsible later.
But would an animal feel that?
Well, so this is, are they able to make these choices freely? Or does it come from a sense of obligation or a sense of some past experience?
What biological imperative, kind of evolutionally speaking, to like generate an instinct could there be for a pod of dolphins to encircle a swimmer to protect them from a shark? I can't think of one.
And I think the thing that bolsters that argument in my mind is the fact that not all pods of dolphins do that.
Right.
That it's different. It's a societal thing within that particular pod. It's not an instinct that is common throughout the species.
Well, but it can still be something that was influenced by, you know, a past experience, like that dolphin saw this happening before and a dolphin was saved because of
it
that.
It could be. I'll grant you, it could be, but it's not the only logical explanation. It could be a truly selfless act. And it's not like, I'm not saying it in the, you know, if you roll the dice a million times, it'll come up one time. Like, it's as reasonable a hypothesis as your hypothesis. Like, they're at least equally as reasonable.
I would disagree that it is equally as reasonable, but if we're going to dismantle that argument, I can go back to the first argument.
As soon as she said that,
stands.
All I heard was that scene from Liar Liar.
Your Honor, I object!
And why is that, Mr. Reed?
Because it's devastating to my case!
Overruled.
Good call!
No, so this is sort of the crux of what I'm wrestling with, because I honestly don't know which side of this argument
I'm on. Yeah, you're
swinging
back and forth, man.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is the same point that you were thinking, but I kept coming down to, as I was going deeper and deeper, that you cannot prove whether or not true altruism exists. It's purely a philosophical discussion. You can use biological, evidence and your thoughts on evolution and
There are lots of theories that you can't prove that we generally accept.
I was going to say, that's also a really damning condemnation of the concept of philosophy. Because I thought that the point of philosophy
or science.
Was...
Yeah. I mean...
There are a ton of theories in science.
Science is different.
No, there are tons of theories in science that are theories that we widely and generally accept.
Well, science is based on empirical evidence. So this is why when I talk about humans, and I am making the case that it is much more likely that true altruism does not exist, there's no way to prove either side of it. I'm sorry if that disappoints all the philosophers out there.
I think that there's a basis in logic in philosophy, so it's not necessarily provable in practice. Theoretically, you should be able to put together your argument in such a way that it is logically impenetrable, which I do, like this to me seems like an unfinished work in that regard. I don't think that there is yet logic to prove one way or the other. It kind of becomes this semantic argument of, so this is why I was so curious about the definition that
depends on the definition that you choose to go by.
Correct.
Yeah. So Dr. Dandishi said bringing it back to humans. So let's move to the next scenario here. I think we've clubbed all the dolphins we need to club. We've beat the argument to death. Jason is on record on the podcast saying that he's an atheist. I wouldn't go so far to say I would say I'm atheist adjacent.
I think what I said was that I am agnostic because I'm enough of a scientist that I allow for evidence to prove me incorrect, but I lean very heavily atheist because I've not seen that evidence yet.
And maybe this is another episode because we talked about doing intelligent design as an episode, and I'm not as far down that spectrum as you, not to get too philosophical on it, but I don't subscribe to religion because I think it's generated by people, and that's my problem with it. But I think that there are enough unexplained things where intelligent design is possibly a viable explanation. I'm not even just leaving it open as like a scientific possibility.
Yeah, we got to do a whole episode.
If you'll recall, we have had conversations about this. And once I crush you today, I would love to be back for that conversation.
All right, well, I want to throw this one to you,
I would like to have you on my team for that conversation, actually.
We'll throw this one to Dr. Dandishi because I think Dr. Dandishi exists on a different spectrum of kind of the religious viewpoint on this than Jason and I do, but how does religion jive with altruism? Because the scenario that I'm seeing here in my head, like pick your religion, it doesn't matter what, but religions have prescribed rules and regulations associated with them. And you could dislike those rules and regulations and actually be frustrated, angry, and have internal negative feelings for having to subscribe to them, but you do them because that is the element of your religion to which you have elected to practice. Are those kinds of actions by definition altruistic? And, you know, most widespread religions have elements of charity connected to them and giving and goodness and helping other people. So what
all the respectable religions. Yeah. Yes.
What positive things do you ascribe from that? And I guess you're probably going to go to the feeling argument, but is it more complex than that?
So the religion angle is very interesting. So I mean, I can say I believe in God. I don't consider myself extremely, extremely religious, but I am somewhat religious. I think if we brought a religious scholar in here, they would point out all the examples in whatever insert religion text of people doing truly altruistic acts. I approach it more from my understanding, my experience with religion is that it is based around God asks you to do certain things because they're good, so you do them. And if you do everything right, you go to heaven. And if you don't, you go to hell. You really can't separate that equation from my experience with religion is that based on that understanding, a lot of religious scholars are probably going to disagree with me on this.
Well, a lot of religious scholars listen to this show, so be careful.
I apologize to the religious scholar community, but to me, that structure of a religion means that God knows that humans need a motivator to do the right thing. So giving them that heaven, hell option is how God gets humans to do the right thing.
See, I so fundamentally disagree with that. I mean, you look at our prisons, they're like 99.9% of people in prisons identify with an organized religion. They're not full of atheists, right? So I don't think that religion is what provides a moral guidance for humans. In the same way that we were talking about, you know, animals and, you know, birds and dolphins doing these altruistic things, like they clearly don't have a religion in the way that we conceive of religion.
Oh, I don't think that religion is like the motivator for people to do things that are truly altruistic.
Right.
I think people, religious or not religious, have a sense of morality and ethics. that probably guide their decision making. But my thoughts on the religious perspective is that even God, who you can argue if you're religious, designed the universe and the perfect system, created a system of motivators and deficits to doing certain things, and said, if you do these things, you go to heaven. If you do these things, you go to hell. To me, that tells me that further makes me sure that there is no true altruism, because even God created a system of benefits and deficits to motivate people to do the right thing.
So the religion I'm obviously most familiar with is Christianity. So the superstar of Christianity is Jesus Christ. So are we qualifying Jesus Christ?
I think God might have something to say about that particular
aspect. The
Prince of
Wales of Christianity is Jesus Christ. So if Jesus Christ sacrifices his life for the good of all other people, because he is a supreme deity being that is
also, where does the Holy Ghost fit in there?
Yeah, sorry. is presumably immune to all these other motivators, then isn't that, if you subscribe to the Christian religion, isn't that an example of true altruism?
So
I don't know enough about it to argue either way. This is more of a question than a point.
This is what I'm going to say, that I also do not know enough. So please, I mean, I can say I am Muslim, but please, all the Islamic scholars, do not come after me.
Also a large subset of our listening audience, scholars.
If you believe deeply in a religion and you believe that everything in a religion is literal, which not everybody does, everybody has a different interpretation. There are people who are described, and I believe this is common across religions, who are described as doing things truly altruistically because they are superior to other people, or they have reached a certain level of spirituality where they can do things that are truly altruistic. I recognize that that is a belief that some people have, and you know, a religious belief is not something that can be easily shaken. I personally do not believe that there is anything truly altruistic. There may be people who have achieved a level where they can give much more than most people can, but there is always some element of benefit either in this life where you will feel in some way good, or you will feel like you're doing the right thing, or you'll feel good for helping the other person, or it can even be something where you are thinking of this action as a good thing that will help me get into paradise.
Okay, so first of all, let me say, I'm about to say this in a comedic sense, and it is my...
Oh, geez, I'm going to have to edit this out.
Yeah, yeah. And it is my own take on this. This is not associated with it. Like, this has nothing to do with what the good doctor has just said.
The bad doctor.
The bad doctor has just said...
The correct doctor.
The correct doctor has just said. But to that point, like, Jesus is sort of a case study in this concept of altruism, right? Like, the idea that he died on the cross for the sins of others, right?
Right.
But yet... He's super famous.
Jesus Christ, superstar. All right, that was the whole religion one was just more of a question for me, and I think Jason just settled
it. It's a very interesting angle. Like, if we had a religious scholar here, this conversation would get much, much more heated. I experienced that in my own household, but it was very beneficial in helping me to prepare for this argument.
Oh my gosh.
It's a philosophical question.
Now that we've done one that's more up Dr. Dendeshi's alley, I'm going to throw a scenario out that might be more up Jason's alley. Could we manufacture true altruism? I'm talking about artificial intelligence now, Jason.
Oh, wow, yeah. That's a good one.
Artificial intelligence is right now, and we've talked about this before on a couple different episodes, but artificial intelligence is a reflection of human biases currently, and the iterations at least that we understand.
Garbage
and know
in, garbage
about,
out. Garbage in.
I think Dr. Newton made the point that they went back through like a particular county's sentencing history and gave an AI the same information or access to all the information, and the AI gave disproportionately harsher sentences.
That's right. It
to
was,
people
it was
of
more
color.
Racist.
It
than
was
the
more
actual,
racist yeah. because it observed racist behavior in the system
That's
and
right.
thought, oh, there must be something more dangerous about these people. We have to treat them more racist.
Right.
And the AI just arrived at that conclusion because of the biases that were built into the data that we put in. But even understanding the fact that we're putting biases into it kind of gives us the data set we need to build an unbiased data set, right? So could we manufacture a truly altruistic artificial intelligence? Could we manufacture true altruism?
So my understanding of AI, and we probably need to bring Dr. Newton back to
and
actually-
He's not a Dr. Dendeshi doctor. He's a real doctor.
He's an actual, yeah.
Are you saying that people who are made doctors on this podcast are not real
just
doctors?
You. Yeah, it's just you.
Actually, we've had several that-
Yeah.
Because, you know-
Dr. Andrew?
Dr. Andrew is definitely not
a real doctor or Dr. TJ.
You are far closer to an actual doctor.
I'll take that.
Yes. But no, that's an interesting point. I think that this actually goes to the good, the bad doctor, the correct doctor's argument.
Thank you.
If we were to manufacture altruism, it wouldn't be true altruism because we're putting our thumb on the scale already, right? So if you compile an artificial intelligence that's capable of learning on its own, the only way that you actually get it to consistently result in altruistic behavior is to change the algorithm in such a way that that's what it favors. So you've already put your thumb on that scale.
Even if you get it to a point where it can develop its own algorithm, like you tell it its entire purpose is to make unbiased decisions that are in the best interest, the overall best interest of, I guess, humanity at this
point. It starts at the very beginning. And it's the same thing, like it's the same concept as natural selection, right? Like, so we all, you know, favor an oxygen-rich environment because we breathe oxygen, right? That's not necessary for all things that exist, but it's very necessary for us. So we're going to be biased in that direction no matter. It's not even a human thing. It's I'm trying to remember what the term is for oxygen generated life, because there are other forms of.
We talked about this in I can't remember which episode it was, but we went through like basically the evolution.
Yes.
Of aerobic and anaerobic.
Aerobic
and anaerobic.
Yeah. So, you know, there's such a thing as anaerobic life that exists that is not based on consuming oxygen. And yet almost all of life that we look at today is, because that was the thumb on the scale that natural selection has put on current life. So given that, you look at all of the different iterations that you get, they're all thinking in those terms. And it's sort of the same thing with AI. If you put the thumb on the scale saying,
if we define what the ultimate good is,
right,
then we're already acting in our own best interest.
Right. And this gets to the fundamental question that we're talking about. What defines ultimate good?
So this is the perfect bridge to the final point I want to make, but I want to see if Dr. Dandishi has anything on artificial intelligence first.
I'm going to defer to Jason.
The microphone can't see you waving your hand in disgust, Dr. Dandishi.
Going to defer to Jason. I am not qualified to comment on the subject of AI.
On that point, Jason... I'm undecided on whether this new term I'm about to throw out is a form of true altruism or it's an alternative form of altruism. But this new term that I saw circulating around in the philosophical circles that debate this question when I was doing my own research is egotistical altruism, which is kind of a contradictory term because egotism and altruism it exist on two extreme ends of the same spectrum. But do they?
No, this is the fundamental point.
Egoism feeds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this is exactly what.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe this is what we're going to, this is the crescendo here, perhaps. Yeah. But the example I saw used was this concept of a positive sum world. So for 0.01% of humanity's history, we've existed in what's called a positive sum world, which means that there is an ever expanding pie of resources.
Right. 0.01% of humanity's existence, that's. Like how many years?
Like since the Industrial Revolution.
Okay.
Yeah. So pre-Industrial Revolution, everything's based on agriculture, which means that it's based on the fixed yields of land, of which there is
For a much longer period, it was hunter-gathering.
Hunter-gathering and then but we basically had a set amount of land with a realistic cap on yields. So it was a zero-sum game.
Sure.
There was a set amount of available resources, and if you wanted more, you had to take them.
Yeah, it's known as carrying capacity.
Right.
Yeah.
Since the Industrial Revolution, economies have, you know, generally up and to the right, have continued to expand. We've had the trend is up and to the right. It's not the rule.
I'm just thinking the movie JFK.
Yeah, right. So because the amount of resources in the system continues to expand, it is possible to gain resources without taking them from someone else. So this is the definition that was put forward with this idea of egotistical altruism. From a biological perspective, one can get more benefits by being altruistic rather than selfish. And the best benefit I saw for this, the kind of like principal example I saw for this was like cancer research. So 1 in 6 people on the planet die of cancer, but only about like 1 in 6 people on the planet exist in an income level where they can actually afford the drugs that would help them if they got cancer. So the people who exist in that spectrum have a vested interest in the five other people behind them raising up their position socioeconomically. So they also have an interest in buying into a system that helps cure cancer. And then their generations proliferate and live longer. And then they identify more complex problems and solve more complex problems with more complex solutions. And it benefits the whole. So this idea of it's almost like accidental altruism. So you're acting in your own self-interest for the benefit of the whole, which is in your own self-interest. So I'm just curious if you all think this is a loophole or egotistical altruism just disproves true altruism even more.
I defer because this is the crux of your argument.
I mean, to me, this pretty clearly bolsters my argument that true altruism does not exist. You know, it may be somewhat rooted in altruism, but everything that you were saying is about cost-benefit analysis, benefits to humanity.
Even if you
benefits.
Don't know you're doing it, like you did you ever consider the concept of egotistical altruism until I brought it up now? You've been participating in it your whole life, but not intentionally seeking it out.
But part of the definition of true altruism is that it's done consciously. You are choosing to do something to benefit another
definition.
Person. I think this
it's what we agreed to.
Yes,
agreed
it
to.
Is what you agreed to, and I do think that's an important part of it. It is not, it may be altruistic, but it is not truly altruistic unless you are choosing to do it consciously.
Okay, well, I think that Dr. Dandishi's made her position clear. We'll do the customary thing that we do and always give our guests the final word. But Jason, where did you come down? Because you were kind of the neutral, you were the hanging third judge on the panel here.
Right. Well, in true Jason fashion, when I said very early on that I knew what side I wanted to be on,
I want to watch the movie I wanted them to make.
That's right. Yeah. So I really don't want the concept of true altruism to exist because, yeah, I just believe in an uglier, more complex world than that. And I think that the last point that you were just making sort of shows the idea that what we're talking, like, there is no binary here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's very difficult to extract what altruism is from what benefits an individual. And the more you think about the tertiary effects, like, it's harder to extract that. That said, given the definition that we have to argue for this episode, I think the good, bad, correct doctor may have made her case.
I'm gonna hang on until Matt admits that he's wrong.
I'm gonna break precedent here, and I actually want the final word because I want to end with a question to Dr. Dandishi.
Answer the question?
Yeah, you get to answer the question. I'll say that I believe that true altruism is not stupid. I believe the definition we used for this podcast is stupid. It's for me the kind of fulcrum that the whole argument hangs on. Is the
that's one
intention.
Of my answers.
Yeah. It's the intentionality.
I love that it's driven you to actually. Yeah.
Well, it's in my own best interest, Jason. So, I concede that Dr. Dandishi made some good points, but I also don't concede that there's hope for the ultimate form of our society, our consciousness, our individuality as humans that we can all achieve some form of existence. That is truly altruistic, and I don't want to believe that.
Oh, I
totally agree. We're heading the exact opposite direction. Yeah.
I continue to subscribe to
stupid
my definition.
Stupid or not stupid. You have to say it properly. Stupid or not stupid. Is it stupid or is it not stupid, Dr. Dandishi?
My definition?
Your definition that we chose? Yeah.
No, I'm going to defend my definition because...
Defend your definition and then let us know if we've changed your mind.
When we went into this conversation, true altruism is very narrowly defined. It does contain... an element of consciousness, intentionality, that is all part of what makes something truly altruistic.
But you agree
that
altruism
agrees. There is a wide spectrum of altruism.
Okay,
altruism, selflessness, 100% agrees. And there's a spectrum. You can get pretty close to true altruism. You can get to a point where you cannot find something, or you cannot even be aware in yourself that you are doing something for selfish reasons, but they still exist. They're just hidden in your self-consciousness.
It's kind of like the speed of light.
Based on this very narrow definition of what true altruism is, it does not exist. But there's a wide spectrum of altruism that 100% exists.
So you're saying that every action that humans take either has an intrinsic or extrinsic value to them. Okay, and you agree that you are a human being.
Yes.
Okay, so then I have a question for you.
Okay.
What intrinsic or extrinsic value did you derive from joining us on the podcast tonight?
I mean, I think I've made it pretty clear throughout this podcast that I really relish the opportunity to prove Matt wrong.
Right. No, that is a very selfish. Yeah.
Like, I was waiting for some like mushy answer, but it was really great hanging with you guys.
Oh, no.
I love the laughs. It was so fun.
She just wanted to crush you.
I just really wanted. Matt was so confident in his answer, and I really wanted to prove him wrong. And this is something where I felt very strongly about my position. And I think that there is, it will win any argument, as we have seen here. So I took joy in that.
The only thing I can say definitively is that I'm concerned of the kind of proximity that I've put Dr. Nandeshi and Jason into each other now, like with their powers combined. I'm deeply, deeply afraid of what my future holds.
She's taught me exactly the tactic to take moving forward.
Control the definition.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, because you're the master of moving goalposts in an argument. And this is exactly how to defeat that. Yeah, it was genius.
Oh, my gosh. All right, Stupid Not Stupid Nation. Well, with that, I'll say make sure to like, share, follow, subscribe, do all that stuff with this episode, because it's definitely in your own best interest. Until next time.